Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 137, recorded October 29th, 2012. Okay. That was for
Kelly.
Yeah, I actually wanted to replace our whole beginning music bit with that. Aquarimax, just for Halloween.
But some of you might not recognize that, but
yeah, well, it was the Addams Family. Which is what, 1960s?
Oh, I don't know, but
it was a long time ago, I guess.
Show about monsters, a Halloween sort of
in the U.S.
show.
Yeah.
Those of you who never saw it, you might wonder about that. Anyway.
Okay, but we didn't have time to record a new thing, so.
And we had to research the fair use of that anyway, so the amount we did will be fine. There you go.
Okay. Moving on.
But that is an introduction to our Halloween show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I hope you have a spooktacular Halloween for those of you who celebrate it. And now we're going to go to our contributor.
Yes, Mick sent in some comments. Okay. He says, "Hi guys, enjoyed the show last week with your guest hosts. What with the surface area song from Kelly and the accompanying dance from the kids, you have the whole entertainment industry sewn up."
Only that were true.
You know, that would be neat, huh?
But the surface area song, tell them about
okay,
the surface
area song. Actual, real, honest-to-goodness surface area song
with
is
lyrics.
Coming. Other than me just going, surface area! Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we actually have
that's
lyrics.
Just a stopgap song. So, in the future, maybe it will be your Christmas present.
We'll see.
We'll get that out to you.
But we're researching the feasibility of using a particular song as the, you know, the background music. So once we work out the copyright issues there, then we'll be releasing it eventually, at least.
Mm-hmm. Okay, he says, "I like the discussion on keeping umbunas recently. I have a tank of 15 yellow Lapidochromis with a thin layer of crushed coral substrate and tuffa rock work. I find that adding..."
It's usually tufa. But I'm sure other people say that too.
Tuffa, tufa.
I've heard it both ways.
Yes. Who knows what that's a reference to? Right in! "I find that adding a few nerites works well. I avoid feeding worms and use predominantly flake foods with blister pack adult brine shrimp or scuds 2 to 3 times a week."
I like that about the nerites. I've never tried that with umbunas, but it makes sense. If they'd have a hard time eating them, then they would be good at keeping some of the algae down and so
that's
on.
Good.
And yeah, scuds are kind of like their natural food in brine shrimp too. I mean, the little crustaceans you find in the algae, so that makes sense.
He says, "From the setups I have seen, keeping mixed species that hybridize often leads to a tank of dull-colored fish after a while, so I like the species-only setups."
Yeah, good point that I didn't mention, did I? I mentioned some of the downsides of hybridizing, but not that one, so thank you for bringing that up,
mate.
That's
a good one. He sent some links to one to a pet fish talk program on umbunas and one about photography.
You want to hear a funny thing?
What?
That one on umbunas?
Yeah.
Got me started on umbunas.
Really?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Years ago.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. I think it was that one. Maybe
when
not.
Did we
Maybe
get
I'm
the
confused.
Umbuna tank?
It's
I don't even know.
Time.
It's been a long time.
Maybe it wasn't that one. I don't remember now, but I think it was.
Okay, he says, "I thought I had cleared the quarries of their parasite infestation. However, when we returned from a week's holiday, they were covered in the little blighters again."
Ugh.
Stupid blighters.
What's that one from?
Yeah, okay, maybe we're just going to have lots of quotes this show, too.
It's okay, it's Halloween.
That's a good Halloween movie.
Right, it
yeah.
is. Perfect.
Okay. "So I've cleared their tank and removed the substrate and sterilized the whole thing with a mild bleach. They are now in a small hospital tank with only a box filter for company and getting the same treatment of medication one day followed by an 80% water change the next. We'll keep fins crossed and hope for the best."
Indeed. All of our fins are crossed.
Mm-hmm. "I saw some small musk turtles for sale recently and was thinking of setting up for them. I have been doing research and, as always, get mixed suggestions for setups. Some claim them to be fully aquatic and some suggest a terrestrial basking area. Also mixed suggestions for using UV lighting on the basing area, so I was wondering if you..." Or basking area, sorry, the K is missing. "I was wondering if you had any experience or suggestions."
Okay. Well, I don't have any direct experience with that, with musk turtles. But I would say that in general with and you'll probably agree with me, Mick, on this, with reptiles, that it's generally a good idea to provide a basking area, whether they use it or not, as you know, just providing the option. There are a few reptiles who just absolutely do not need one, but I'm thinking that if people, and I believe seen the same sort of thing, mixed suggestions on that, but I would say it doesn't do any harm to provide it except for the extra pain and expense of adding it. But in terms of the turtle, if the turtle never uses it, its existence won't hurt anything. But if it needs it, then it'll be there. And you know, even turtles that don't necessarily need it for UV light, it's good for them to just be able to dry off occasionally for their skin's health, so they don't get fungal infections and so on. And of course, there are turtles who don't need it, like soft-shelled turtles and, you know,
Are they just
snapping
completely
turtles and
aquatic? They never come out?
Well, they can come out, but they don't need to in general. What was I just saying? The soft-shelled turtles.
Soft-shelled.
Yeah, at least a lot of them don't need to come out, but they can, but they don't need to. But anyway, I would say that musk turtles, I've heard that some of them will even climb into trees. Some of the musk and mud turtles will climb into trees and then drop off when you get close, things like that. So if they're doing
To
that,
what point and purpose, little turtle?
probably some basking and some safety. I mean, it's an easy way to escape
But why fall
predators.
off? Why jump on people?
No, you just land in the water, and then you can swim off to safety if anybody bothers you.
Oh, you get close and then they swim off into
Right.
safety in the water. I thought you meant
Not
like
onto your
they fell
head.
on you, like
That would hurt.
Cowabunga, bonsai turtle,
Teenage Mutant
Teenage
Ninja
Mutant
Musk
Ninja
Turtles.
musk turtles,
Yeah,
yeah.
there you go. So, well, UV, I mean, it's true that UV in UV light is necessary for a lot of reptiles to be able to synthesize vitamin D3. And if
People
they
need
don't get
that
it,
too, don't we?
they do. We can get it dietarily, and some reptiles can too, but it's generally considered best for them to be able to synthesize it through UV light. But the thing is, it can be damaging to eyes and things like that.
Do they have little turtle sunglasses?
Well, you see, some baby turtles do. No, just kidding. No, you have to be careful, especially with babies, that they can get overexposed. And things like mercury vapor bulbs, which can produce a lot of UVB light, which is great for, you know, adult tortoises and turtles and things like that that aren't quite as sensitive. But with the young, it can be too much. So this might be a good suggestion, since you're saying they're small musk turtles, is use something other than a mercury vapor light for their basking heat source, like a ceramic heat emitter, maybe, and then use just a fluorescent light that emits UVB for their UVB source. Make sure it's, you know, 10 inches or so or less away from them. But that'll be a lot less strong in terms of the heat and the UVB, that they won't suffer damage from that. So that's what I would recommend if you're going to set that up. And once again, I have to say my disclaimer, I've never kept musk turtles, but with my experience with herptiles, I can say that might be a good way to go.
Alrighty. Okay, Tony has sent us a list
Well, actually,
for
no,
how we
Tony and Mick
Tony, oh, okay, this is compiled from both of them.
both
Sorry,
sent
my
us a list.
mistake.
No, it's okay. I've got their names both down here. And so both Tony
Neat.
and Mick have sent us the list. And yes, so why don't you read that from there you go.
This is compiled from both of them. Okay.
But I love this. This is Mick's. Wait, I can't remember if this is Mick's or Tony. This is
This
Tony's.
is Tony's. He says, "Here's a
Tony's
little
intro.
something for your Halloween show. Have a happy Halloween, but whatever you do, don't go in the water."
I love that. And Mick also put a part of the list together. So I've compiled a kind of sort of a hybrid list from both of their lists.
Okay.
I wish I could do all of them because they're so cool, but we're just gonna go with
Okay.
kind of a mix of both.
Okay, the first one we're going to talk about are fairy shrimp.
Now, this is a nod to the whimsical nature of Halloween.
Yes, plus I have been a fairy numerous times for Halloween.
Right, so that kind of fits.
Yeah.
And fairy shrimp are probably one of the most whimsical invertebrates you will ever encounter.
What do
Don't
they
you
look
agree?
like?
Well, they look like little flying feathers.
I haven't seen them. You should show
Oh,
me a
we've bred
picture.
them before. Don't you remember fairy shrimp?
Oh, I don't know why. Those, I always want to, I always think of fairy like Ferry when I see those. I don't know why. Like,
Really?
they're But that would work for Halloween, too. They're like the ferryman that carries you across the River Styx, right?
Except they look so whimsical and happy.
They do. I don't know why I picture that word instead of F-A-I-R-Y. But
I don't know.
Okay. I know what we're talking about now.
Yeah. And they're cool, aren't they?
They are. They're beautiful. They float and
they do.
And
so whimsical
featherate.
And vertebrate, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
So, I love that suggestion for the list.
So tell us a little bit more about the fairy shrimp.
Well, basically, most of them are vernal pool animals. They live in temporary pools of water, and you can actually buy several species on the internet as dried eggs and then just hatch them with some distilled water and some light.
Oh, see, that makes sense because fairies flit around and they don't, you know, they're not going to just
stay in one place. Sort of the ephemeral nature manifests there. So if you're interested in those, just check it out. Google fairy shrimp and find out eggs or fairy shrimp cysts, and you can do it. We've hatched them before and they're fun. So there you go.
Okay, next one is ghost shrimp.
Ghost shrimp, ha. Huh. Ghost shrimp are ghostly.
Indeed.
They're not quite as whimsical, but they're interesting just because of their very transparency. And of course, ghost shrimp are widely sold in pet stores as food animals, but they can be kept as pets as well. And their transparent nature is very interesting. You can see them swallowing food and all kinds of fun stuff.
Yes, and aren't we glad that people are not transparent for those same reasons?
Yes, we are. We're very glad about that. They can be bred, actually, depending on the species, but because there are a number, and some of them are brackish water, and some are salt water, and some are fresh water, and some are just not very particular.
They're all the same species, though?
No, there are various species.
Oh, okay. They're just all transparent shrimp.
Yes, and they're easy to collect, and they're cheap, and so you can go buy some for a few cents. But you can breed them. I've bred them a couple of times. The species that I bred, at least, produce planktonic young that, you know, are suspended in the water column for a week or two, and then they descend and become little replicas of the adults, and they weren't very prolific, I think, because they tend to eat their young, and their young tend to bash themselves to death against things. But I did get a few
to
grow up, so they're kind of interesting and ghost.
Okay, next on the list is sea goblins.
This is number three?
Yep.
Okay, sea goblins.
Or number, you know.
Well, counting down, they'd be number seven, right?
Number eight.
Oh, yeah, I don't have very good math in my head. Okay, here we go. Sea goblins are very interesting creatures. They're basically a type of scorpion fish, I guess. And they're venomous. They have venomous dorsal spines.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to mess around with them. Much like goblins, right? They look cryptic, very cryptic. And they're ambush predators. They lie in wait, partially buried in the substrate. Something comes along that looks tasty and they slurp it up.
Weird.
Their fins on the bottom of their body, their ventral surface, are modified. At least some of their fins are modified so that they can walk around on them like legs.
Weird.
Very funky little creatures and very cryptic, looking like a lump of who knows what on the bottom with all sorts of appendages sticking out. Very bizarre little creatures.
Very odd.
But, you know, people keep them as aquarium pets. Just they're not all that safe to handle. You got to be really careful.
Where would you even get them? Just online?
You can buy them from dealers and, you know, local fish stores and stuff. I don't recommend them particularly because they're venomous. I don't tend to recommend.
Yeah, why keep venomous things?
Recommend venomous things very much. Okay.
Let's go ahead and take our break and then we will come back and talk about more.
Number seven?
Yes, then it will be number seven.
My math is improving.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629 or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nine.
Okay, our next one, number seven, is the vampire fish or payara.
Okay, now there's more than one fish. There are at least a couple of species referred to as the vampire fish. So this is the one we're going to do now, and we'll do the other one later.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now this one, I'm not sure how that word is pronounced, payara, if it's payara or payara or payara. I don't know. No idea. But I just like to say payara because it's fun. You can also call it Vampire Tetra. It has a lot of names.
It's a tetra?
Many different names, yeah. Let's see. I think the Latin name is Hydrolycon, which, if I'm correct, means water wolf.
Hmm.
That's the genus
name. That's funny because, you know, lichens and vampires traditionally don't like each other very much, so this must be a very confused fish.
Well, I don't know how confused it is, but it's scary. They can get to be about 4 feet long,
wow.
Some of the larger species, and they have these incredible vampire-like fangs. I mean, hypodermic needle, scary-looking things.
Wow.
And they're considered sport fish in the places where they live, and they can impale piranhas with their fangs.
Is that what they eat?
That's one of the things they eat. They eat fish.
I guess they just eat whatever they want.
They eat fish up to half their body size.
Wow.
Scary little creatures.
Do they suck their blood?
I don't believe so.
Or they just impale them?
I think they impale them as part of the whole hunting process, but I don't think they actually.
Yeah. Wow.
But they might as well, the way they kill them. I mean, they're dead.
Tell me again,
teeth.
where are they at?
South America.
Ocean or river? Or
they are freshwater.
They're freshwater.
Yes. Scary things.
See, that's another good reason to never go swimming in South America. No offense to anybody who lives there, but I don't want to get near water.
Yeah, it's a scary-looking fish. I don't know how much danger they pose to humans, but those teeth scare me. Can I just say that?
If they thought your foot was a fish.
I know. Darn.
I've
swum with barracudas a few times in Hawaii. Little ones.
They kind of stay away, though.
But they didn't really... I didn't worry about it too much. They were fairly small anyway. Mm. So there you go.
Okay.
That's the Paiata.
Number six.
What do we got for number six?
Fangtooth fish.
Oh, that's a deep sea fish. It has sort of similar dentition in some ways to the Paiata.
I'm just
going to
say, I love
about.
That you just used the word dentition.
Did I?
Yes, you did. You didn't say their teeth are kind of similar. Or even their teeth are kind of the same. You said they have similar dentition.
Okay, well, they do, in a way. I mean, superficially similar anyway. They've got these really long, outrageously vicious-looking fangs.
Do they stick out of their mouth?
And
like when their mouth is closed, or they...
That is a great question to which I do not know the answer. But I've seen pictures of them. They look scary.
They usually have their mouth open in the picture?
Yes. They're nightmarish fish.
Yeek.
Where you look at them and you just say, wow, that's... I don't want to do
I'm glad that's at the bottom of the ocean.
And not here.
Yes.
Yes.
How big do they get?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. They're just so scary. You don't even want to know.
Yeah.
You don't want to get close enough to know how big they are.
Exactly.
Okay.
They're cool.
Okay, let's go number five. Electric eel.
Electric eel. There you go. Now, there is a fish that you wouldn't want to bother. They can really, you know, anything that can kill its food with electricity, I mean, that's just bizarre that even exists, for one. That's
like
one of those creatures that...
Superpower fish.
I know. It's one of those creatures that if it didn't exist, people would make it up. But it exists, so people don't make it up because they don't have to. You know what I mean? Like sea dragons?
Yeah. I love sea dragons. Those should be on the Halloween show just under the
whimsical
category.
Yeah,
yes.
Sure. But electric eels. I remember going to see one at the New England Aquarium?
Uh-huh.
And they had it hooked up to this thing that was reading the electric current it was producing. It's crazy. Every time it moved, it...
So do they just produce it constantly? It's not, like, under control?
Well,
like
we produce electricity constantly, too.
Yeah, but not as much as that.
Yeah, we can't do it the same way we do. But every muscular movement they make does produce some. But they have huge surges that they can produce in control for, you know, predation and for protection and so
do
on.
Do they have to do big movements to produce more?
I don't
or
believe
is
they
it...
do. I think it's under control.
Interesting.
That's independent of their movement, as far as I understand it. I could be wrong on that one. For example, if we clench our fish, clench a fish, that's awful. If you clench your fish, you're producing, you know, more electric current than you would be if you're not. That muscle movement relates to that electricity you're producing. But
Do they have certain muscles that are kind of dedicated to producing electricity
organs,
that they can...
organs that are produced, that, are dedicated to
producing. They clench their
electricity.
Organs?
I don't know how all the physiology of it works, but I do know they have organs that are dedicated to it, that kind of are batteries, in a way.
Weird.
They have, you know, potential across. There's a gradient that allows them. It's like a bio battery.
So maybe the electric eels could be like Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Shock a fish sewn together out of bits of other fish back into life.
Or defibrillate themselves.
Or that.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
There you go. Anything like that.
Okay, I just realized that you didn't actually put 10 on this list. You put 12, so now our numbers are all messed up.
Oh, well, that's okay. See, I'm really bad at math, but it's okay. It's fun to talk about fish anyway.
Okay, let me count for a second.
I think...
Okay, now we're actually on number 6.
Okay.
So, ghost knife fish.
Ghost knife fish.
Okay. A knife in the dark.
Yeah, they're shaped like knives, which is why they call them knives.
Are they transparent?
They look like a blade. I don't think there are any completely transparent ones. There are lots of different colors of knife fish.
Mm-hmm.
Some are kind of mostly black, and some are gray, and some are, you know, different colors. Anyway, the reason why they call them ghost knife fish, I don't think, is because of their color so much. It's just because they're nocturnal, but they're predatory.
Mm.
And they're predatory in an interesting way. Let me tell you, a dear friend of mine had a 55-gallon tank once. And one day, they said, you know what? Something weird is happening. My neon's eyes are disappearing. I'll wake up in the morning and all of a sudden we got a neon and one of his eyes is gone. And then the next day there's another one and his eyes are gone and blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
Like this.
And I said, is this going to be one of those stories where you reach out and grab me and yell boo at the end?
No. But it's kind of a scary ghost knife fish story. And I said, what do you got in there? And I came to look at the tank. And I was looking around, and okay, you got this, you got that. No, those won't hurt anything. And then I said, oh, what's that over there in the driftwood? It's a knife fish. It's your knife fish. That's what's eating the eyes.
Yuck.
So, yeah. They will do that.
They're kind of aggressive that way.
Yeah, yeah. They're not aggressive in terms of, well, they can be mean to other knife fish and so on, but they're just aggressive in the terms that they'll eat things, you know.
If they can get it, they'll eat it.
Yeah, if it's small enough to eat, they'll eat it. And they're also electric, not in the same way that electric eels are electric. They can't, like, shock something to death, but they use electric currents for echolocation, sort of, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
They can send out a current that helps them read objects in the area. They can see, so to speak, through these currents. And
it's the ectoplasma.
Yeah, and so they can do that, and they can also communicate with each other, give each other messages. They can say, I'm a male, I'm a female, I'm available, I'm not available, that kind of
stuff. I'm eating somebody's eyeballs,
yeah,
you want to come over and have some.
And there's actually quite a bit of research that's been done on different species of knife fish and other related fish of the family, the mormyrids, and how they communicate and how these different frequencies, they'll notice another fish is coming by of the same species, and they don't want to mess each other and interfere with each other's echolocation, so they'll change frequency. And
oh, wow.
You know, it's very interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So there you go, the ghost knife fish.
Okay, number 5, a blobfish.
Okay, we have to put a picture of the blobfish out.
I haven't seen it. What does it look like?
It looks like something out of Yellow Submarine from the Beatles. That movie,
oh dear,
cartoon, if you ever saw that. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know what to call it. It's the most bizarre thing. The bizarre-looking fish. When you look at it, you say, that cannot be real.
Is it not fish-shaped? Is it really
blob-shaped?
It looks like
it has a big, lumpy, troll-like nose, for one. At least when it's on land. I mean, underwater, it's got to look a little bit different because of the buoyancy, but when you have it up on land, it's the most bizarre thing you ever saw. Really.
Where do they live?
They're deep sea fish.
Oh, see, everything weird lives deep in the ocean. I don't want to go deep in the ocean.
Deep in the ocean.
Well, you're not that weird.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the dat. In there. Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, they're so weird. So we've got to put a picture up. I'll try.
Okay.
On the show page, because you have to see it to believe it.
What do they eat?
I think they just kind of suck stuff up, whatever they find.
So they're just like really like the blob in the movie. They just kind of flop around, and
they're just really weird. You got to see it.
We should make a 50s inspired B movie called The Blob Fish. Okay. Number 4, the invisible fish. Is that like the invisible man? He takes off his scales and he's not there anymore.
Well, this one, I think this one was Tony's, and he was referencing our invisible fish. The fish that John, Sean, and
that invisible fish.
In college, the one that just inhabited that little desktop tank that didn't actually exist. And the resident assistant came in, you know, fish aren't allowed. Oh, there aren't any fish in there. What? No, you can go look. There aren't any fish in there. And our friend, hey, what do you got in there? Oh, it's a fish. It's a little black coolie loach. Really? Yeah, he lives in that castle.
You know, he's very shy. He doesn't come out to play.
You want to feed him? Sure. Okay. He's not coming out. Still not coming out. You got to be really patient. That was fun. Okay.
Oh, that's really
an April Fool's fish more than a Halloween fish. But I'm glad that, Tony put it on the list because I love that story.
Okay, number three, which also has a backstory, which you will have to tell, is Bar Chickles.
Oh, Bar Chickles. He was a goldfish that I got from somewhere, I think from my neighbor.
How old were you?
I wasn't very old. I was probably like 10 or something. Okay. Anyway, got this goldfish, and he was big. The biggest goldfish I'd had up to that point. And my little cousin named him Bar Chickles. I don't know where he got that. He just looked at it and said, that's Bar Chickles.
I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, and he would go up and just slurp snails right out of their shell, just bam. No preamble, nothing. Just he'd slurp them all up, and he killed all my snails in short order. And that's not particularly unique in goldfish, but the way he did it and the thoroughness and the speed with which he did it was kind of unique.
He was kind of like a pit bull goldfish, and all of your little sisters and cousins were scared of him.
Yeah, my mom, she would see him and say, "Oh, that fish gives me the willies." he was just an interesting creature. So there we go.
He wanted to eat the world. Okay, number two, piranha.
Okay, no list of scary fish is complete without the piranha.
No.
Now, most of us are aware, I think, that the legends and stories surrounding the piranha are somewhat exaggerated. That there are many people who go swimming in areas that are inhabited by piranhas without any difficulties, and so on. I mean, but they do have a nice set of teeth on them, and they can do damage in the proper conditions. So they're still kind of scary.
I'd say they're still a lot scary.
Yeah. You know, one of my coworkers has a taxidermied piranha in his office. His name is like Pedro or something.
The fish?
The fish.
Okay.
I think that's his name.
Vote for Pedro.
Anyway, he's got scary teeth. And my fifth grade teacher had a taxidermy piranha too, and I used to love to touch the teeth.
Ooh.
They were sharp. Anyway, so even though the threat they pose to human life is exaggerated, they're still, formidable teeth and formidable fish.
Yes, and scary.
Okay,
number one. The other vampire fish, Candiru?
Okay, this is the nightmare fish of all nightmare fish.
What is it?
Now, once again, I must give the disclaimer that the reputation of this fish is probably not wholly deserved. That there are relatively few documented cases of this fish actually doing what it's reputed to do. But even if it has only happened once in the whole world, it's awful.
What is it?
Well, let us say that someone who happens to be swimming in...
It's not the pea fish, is it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, dear.
It's the fish that, if you happen to be swimming in the waters where this fish lives and your underwear aren't tight enough, the fish could possibly inch in places where it's not welcome.
And swim up.
Yes, and then... it does have spines.
How is this going to be a teeny tiny little fish?
And it is a parasitic fish. So in fish, it swims into the bodies of other fish, like through the gills.
Oh my goodness.
And chews on what it finds there, right? So you can only imagine. As I said, there are very few documented cases of this happening in humans. Not as many as its reputation might indicate. And even those, at least one of them, one of the most famous documented cases is up to dispute. So whether this has really happened as often as it's, said to happen or whatever, but it has a reputation among local people for doing these sorts of things. And
what do you do if that happens?
Well, that's the thing. If this has ever really happened or not, that's one thing. But I guess surgical removal is usually the only option. Or would be the only option if it ever actually happens. But anyway, it's not a fish you want to be acquainted with in any sense of the word.
Dang.
Yeah. It's a very small fish, but it doesn't matter. It has no business going where it is reputed to go.
It's gone where no fish has gone before.
So, that's definitely the nightmare fish of all nightmare fish for me.
I don't think we should end the show on that note. I think we need something else.
We're not going to.
Oh, okay, good. I thought we were done.
No, because then no one would ever listen to our show ever again.
It's true.
We talk about scary fish. Okay. We're going to talk about something else.
What else are we going to talk about?
We're
going
to talk about how today someone came to pick up some bettas, wanted to buy a betta.
Oh, yeah, this is not scary. This is just nice.
And had such a hard time choosing. Because this...
You had four different ones that you had taken
four different ones, because this person had said, okay, these are the bettas I'm looking at. So I got four out and said, okay, take your pick from these four. And she was just... She looked at
flummoxed.
And she thought, oh, I don't know which one to do. They look so cool. What should I do? And she said, I'm going to go take a walk, and I'll come back, and then I'll pick one. And when she came back, she said, that didn't help. Because she just began thinking more and more about the ones that she saw. But anyway, it was nice. She really was happy to get some nice betta. And she also said, if I can manage to get one more tank, I'm going to come back and get another one, because I don't think I can decide.
Oh, cool.
So, I don't know. As long as she gets another tank, then
they did come out to be pretty nice looking babies.
We have a lot of nice ones in there. Yeah. So many different things, and so many things that are showing up that we didn't expect to see.
Did you tell them about the blushing?
I think I did mention the blushing ones. And some of the ones that were butterfly at the beginning, they had blue just at the bases of all their fins. The blue has gone through their entire fins, but become lighter. And then we've got some other butterflies with just a deep red butterfly color within transparent edges and different
things.
It
looks really nice.
So there's a lot of nice fish coming out there, and they're getting a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. Some of them are big enough that they look like, buy them at the pet store. The sizes that ones you start seeing there, so that's kind of fun.
Yep. You did get on that.
I know, and we've jarred, I think, 25 males, 26 males, something like that.
And we had what? Last count was 51 babies?
51 fish. 51. So either we had a little larger number, maybe 55, 60 of them, and a few passed on, or none of them have. And it's hard to tell, because I have never found any corpses in the tank, but...
Well, they'd probably go pretty fast,
though. We do know we lost a couple with the siphoning accidents a long time ago when they were quite small, but just a couple. And then we had some with the swim bladder issues, and we saw some improving, getting better. And then we don't know if any of those other ones just disappeared, got eaten, whatever, or if they recovered. But anyway, it's been a fun experience. It's been a lot of work, but we've all learned things, and the kids are learning and having fun, and they're earning pocket money. And
they like that.
It's a lovely thing. So.
Well, happy Halloween.
Yeah, whether or not you celebrate it, we hope your October 31st is a good day.
Yeah, and even if you don't celebrate it, you can just go eat a piece of candy, and then you will!
Yeah, that will be a sort of celebration. And we hope you dream of things like fairy shrimp and, sea dragons rather than...
this other nastiness.
...fairy fish that we won't mention so that we can end on a happy note.
Yeah.
So may the friendly fish...
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.